Hey there, it's Kaysunga, and I have a really cool announcement for y'all. Headspace is now offering mental health coaching in the Headspace app. You can connect with a trained expert for live, text-based one-on-one support on your time from anywhere. Whether they're helping you cope with daily stress and anxiety or supporting you through big life events like loss or relationship hurdles, your coach will draw from clinically validated tools to help you reach any mental health goals. You can text a mental health coach for just $99.99 a month. Just sign up on the Headspace app or at headspace.com/coaching.
I remember my father came to me, but he said, just go, we will be fine, you go. I'm like, no, I don't want to go. You have no choice, go. I felt as if a voice in me was saying, look at them, take the last picture. You will never see them again. And I left.
From Headspace Studios, I'm Katherine Schwarzenegger-Pratt. This is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. Today, I'm honored to be with Immaculee Ilibagiza, author, motivational speaker, forgiveness advocate, and survivor of the Rwandan genocide. On April 6, 1994, an airplane carrying Rwanda's president, Juvenal Habyarimana, was shot down. The assassination sparked widespread violence across the country between its two main ethnic groups, the majority Hutus and the minority Tutsis. Within hours of the president's death, an organized slaughter of the Tutsis began, leading to the mass murder of more than 1 million Rwandans over the span of just 100 days. Immaculee is a Tutsi. She was separated from her family in the first days of the genocide and survived by hiding in a neighbor's bathroom for 91 days with seven other women. Immaculee's family was murdered while she sought refuge in the neighbor's home that her father sent her to. The Rwandan genocide is historically known as one of the bloodiest events in modern history, and miraculously, Immaculee was able to find it in her heart to forgive after all she and her country had been through. In today's episode, Immaculee shares her harrowing story of survival and discusses her incredible journey to get to a place of being able to practice forgiveness. Immaculee was a normal 22-year-old college student home on break when the genocide began.
The week it all started, I was home for Easter holiday. I was supposed to be home for 1 week because we had an exam that was supposed to happen when we come back. On Wednesday, right in the middle of that holiday, we woke up to the news. They told us the president of the country was killed that night.
Immaculee's brother had heard that Hutu-led groups had been preparing to attack the Tutsis for some time. Many historians argue they'd planned the genocide for as long as a year, and the president's assassination was just the catalyst they needed.
My brother was like, "That maybe we should run away now. We should just move from the house." And my father again refused. And the next morning, it was too late. They blocked the borders. They have started killing people already, like literally minutes after they killed the president.
So you woke up to total chaos and obviously a huge divide between Hutus and Tutsis.
Yes. That was always there. I don't like the tribes because people call you names and then they make it big. To this day, one of my best friends, who was that time from the other tribe, Hutu, to this day, she's still my best friend.
Right.
I had a boyfriend who was from the other tribe.
This moment was the result of decades of civil unrest between the tribes. But what Immaculee saw in her community was very different than what she heard on the news.
So it wasn't like it was such a hatred between people. It was always the politicians who were using it for their own interest to divide people. The Hutus, Tutsis, oh, we hate, they hate us. I'm like, but this is not the same in my school. We love each other. So in the morning, when they started to say, we are haunting people who killed the president, we are haunting people who are his enemies, it was really almost like a fight between politicians. And then about a week later, it became tribes. Oh, actually, our real enemy was the Tutsis, so let's kill them. But it was so open and obvious and horrible. Government ministers would say things like, don't forget the children, we are cleansing the country.
With the country's borders blocked so no one could get out, Immaculée, her parents, and her two brothers stayed at home, listening for any updates on the radio. As Immaculée and her family awaited news of their future, they heard that Hutu groups were making their way across the country, killing men and children and raping women. Her father knew it was only a matter of time before they found them. On the second day of the massacre, he gave Immaculée his rosary beads and told her to go to the neighbor's house and hide for safety. The neighbor was a Hutu pastor, and her father thought he could keep Immaculée safe.
I'm like, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. You have no choice. You just go to the neighbor. We will be fine. You go. And I remember leaving. I felt as if a voice in me was saying, look at them. Take the last picture. You will never see them again. And I tried to fight that voice within. No, we're going to see each other. This is our village. This is our village. We come from here. People love us and we love them. So there's no way this can be it. But I remember stopping, looking at my family, and I left. And the truth is, that was the last time I ever saw them.
So you went from there to your neighbor's house, who was a pastor and a Hutu, and you went and stayed and hid in his home.
Yes. I went to him. One thing I will never forget was how his face was looking when he saw me. He was so scared. And he showed me inside the house, and he showed me a bathroom in his bedroom. And he said, come here. And I went inside. And it was so small. It was 3 by 4 feet. The first shocking thing was like, what do you want me to do here? This is too small. How can I, where do I sleep? Where do I sit? Where is anything? I mean, so as I was complaining, the man came back with 5 more women.
Wow.
And again, I'm like, gosh, this is too small for 6 people. And the next thing, he brought 2 more. So we were 8 in 3 by 4 feet. 3 days before that, I was a student in college. 3 days before that, I had my own room and I have a scholarship. I had my parents, you know, we didn't have much, but I thought we had it. It was everything.
Before the genocide, all Immaculée cared about was making her parents proud, doing well in school, and growing into the woman she would become. Now, she wasn't sure if she would survive through the night.
Can you describe what was going through your mind when you were standing in a 3x4 bathroom with, you know, 7 other women, not knowing the future for yourself, for the women around you, and also for your family?
The first week, what was hurting most was impatience. Like, I can't stay another day. I can't take this. And then I was struggling with anger. Just like, I can't believe these people can put us here. I haven't done anything to deserve this. The self-pity, the anger, the need to go out, it was so much in the first week, not knowing what was going to happen, not knowing when this was going to finish, thinking that you can die in a second. To think about the possibility of you dying, being tortured, it was like dying many times.
Did you ever have a moment where you wanted to seek revenge or you wanted to go express your anger, let your anger out, have vengeance?
Oh, that was a huge fantasy. I had anger and I thought it was my own weapon to fight them. You hate me, I hate you more. So, and I was planning about becoming a soldier and then flying planes. And then I can put in the plane all the bombs and then throw them from the sky, like throw them all over the country and blow up everybody. And I thought I can do that. And the worst thing with anger, it becomes a sickness. It becomes an obsession and becomes exhausting. And your body is aching. I had a headache. I had my stomach ache. My whole body was in pain, but I didn't know what else to do, because that, what do you do when you are going through what I was going through? And then the second week, I remember I asked the man who was hiding us to put a radio outside so we can hear what was going on. That's when we heard they have actually been killing everybody. And then they gave order to start searching every home to see if anyone was hiding.
One day, Immaculée and the other women she was hiding with heard a group of Hutu militants knock at the door and come inside the house. They were looking for any Tutsis that the pastor could have been hiding.
I thought my life was over. Are they going to put a knife in my back? Are they going to put, you know, to shoot me from the back? Are they going to keep me and hurt me and just like torture me? What is going to happen? But I thought I was going to die. It wasn't, oh, they might not find us. It was for sure. I remember in that agony of knowing it's happening, I had two voices over my shoulders. So one voice was telling me, open the door. End the torture. It's too painful. Why wait? The waiting for them was like 1,000 needles was going through my body. I couldn't feel my body, but I was in pain. I couldn't remember where my fingers, my feet are, if I had a mouth, if I have a head. It was just a complete pain. I felt, on the other hand, was another voice in me, something that was telling me, don't open the door. Ask God to help you. Remember who God is? God is Almighty. But then I was faced with a choice. Which one to listen to? The one that says give up is too painful, end the torture, or the one that says there's still hope? No matter how painful it is, there's still hope. I remember asking God with every cell of my body, if you can hear me, I'm begging you, don't let the killers find the door of the bathroom. I will always trust in you. I will seek to know more about you, how you work, who you are, what you like, how I should behave. I ask him, don't let them open the door of the bathroom.
Leading up to that moment, Immaculée doubted if God even existed. But that day, the men searched the whole house until they came to the bathroom door. Then they paused. They turned to the pastor and said they trusted him, and they left.
I fainted after that until about 5 hours later, the man who was hiding us, he came to open the door. I was still frozen. He's like, they left a long time ago. I thought, oh my God, God is real. Oh my God, he's really real. That is the feeling I had. Wow. And then I told the pastor, I'm like, do you have a Bible? Can you give me a Bible? And he went and brought me the Bible. And I started to read everything. So that was a new day.
Immaculée spent the rest of her time in hiding, having open conversations with God.
And I had so many questions. Why is this happening? If you are God Almighty, why this mess can happen in the world you created? You are perfect. Why is this mess happening? People are killing each other. How can God, who is God of love, be here? It was all confusing. I know you are there. I know you heard me. Now I'm going to search you to find out who you are, how I need to deal with you. What do you like? Because this is not from God. This genocide, this hatred, it cannot be from the God I was reading about.
She wondered how it was possible in a world with God that she could be cramped in a bathroom with 7 women hiding for her life, not knowing her fate, the fate of her family, her country, or how humans were capable of such evil.
And I felt like he was saying, I gave you directions. I gave you commandment. Love one another. That word keeps coming to me. Love one another. And if you have to spend the rest of your life trying to figure out what love means, because sometimes it's not so obvious. If you have to spend your life, this is all you need to do. Love one another.
Immaculée held the rosary her father gave her tighter and began to pray daily. She tried to put her anger aside, but still, when she would recite the Lord's Prayer, she always felt conflicted by one line.
Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Oh, I didn't like it. I don't think I mean it. Forgive? No, I don't forgive. Especially people who have hurt me. One thing I realized was that I needed to be truthful to the voice within. I needed to be truthful. So if I say these words, I need to mean it. So I remember saying, let me skip this part of the prayer because my God understands me, the reason why I'm angry. So I know he doesn't want me to forgive them. I cannot forgive.
Immaculee fought deeply with the thought of having to forgive people responsible for the mass murder of so many innocent Rwandans. She continued to read the Bible and one day came across a story that helped her understand how she could work her way to a place of forgiveness. In the story, Jesus begged God to forgive his own persecutors while on the cross and to forgive those who betrayed him, saying, "They know not what they do."
And I felt he was speaking to me. People are killing your family. They might cause you so much pain, but they still don't know what they're doing. People who do all this evil, they hurt because they are blind. They don't know what they do. Blind by what? Because they can see. I see the eyes. Blinded by hatred. Blinded by selfishness. Blinded by all kind of evil that, again, is spoken. Greed that is spoken by lust. All these things God says are sins. They're really sins because they blind us to love. My eyes were open like a veil was unveiled. All of a sudden, I realized that the people who were killing us, if I truly profess to love God, and which I did, and I do, I need to realize that they are also God's children. The same way a parent can have 10 children and two of them becomes bad, and the parent will still love them and suffer because of the bad ones. He must be suffering really bad for them. I need to pray for his children more than hating them. I decided to tell God, help me. I couldn't hate them anymore. Not only I forgave them, I can truly tell you now, I really had love for them. A huge luggage was lifted from my shoulders. I felt so happy. I felt like my body was floating in the air. The obsession of anger was gone. I was clean. I was safe. I was secure. For the first time, I thought, I need to prepare my future. I need to get ready. Because I think it's going to happen.
We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com. After 91 days in hiding, Tutsi rebel groups drove the Hutu government out of the country, and the killing stopped. Immaculee stepped out into the world with a sense of peace. Peace about being free once again, and peace in her freedom from the heaviness of hatred. When Immaculee was finally free, she discovered her home burned to the ground and learned of the brutal deaths of her family. They were killed by a group of men, led to the family by someone Immaculee once considered a close family friend. Immaculee learned that the man responsible for her family's death had been arrested and put in a nearby prison. She went to visit him.
He was a man who was like a father to me. I respected him in my life. But this time I saw him, his body had changed. He was skinny. His feet were swelling. His pants were teared up. He was just in a bad state. Because he was a man who had a good job, a good family, who ate well. Now he was in prison like that. And I remember when I saw him, the first reaction was I broke down in tears. I cried so hard. They didn't know what they were doing. They did not even measure the consequences that would come to them. And look at him. 2 months later, look where he is. I cried and I reached out to him. A part of me was yearning to just tell him, look, don't have me as an excuse. I wish you to go through your own journey as I did mine. You can forgive whatever you have in your heart, but also forgive yourself.
Immaculee had forgiven him for what he had done to her family, but she didn't want him to mistake her compassion for absolution.
I wasn't wishing him come out of the prison because I didn't know if he still had hatred that he would go and start killing people again. But I just wished his heart, through which the peace I have found.
As Immaculee was leaving the prison that day, the jail warden confronted her. He'd overheard her conversation with the man. The warden was a Tutsi and had also lost his whole family in the massacre. The guard was furious because he had allowed Immaculee to visit the prisoner to express her rage and seek revenge for the death of her family and his. Instead, Immaculee had given him forgiveness. But Immaculee knew that treating that man with compassion was the best way, the only way, to bring healing and peace to all of them. Over the past 27 years, Immaculee had encountered a lot of people, just like the warden, wondering how she was able to forgive. She has rebuilt her life and wrote a book about her journey to get to where she is today, and most importantly, how she has learned to forgive and the benefits that have come along with that. She's traveled throughout Rwanda and around the world, telling her story in an effort to help mend the wounds in her country and inspire others to see the effect forgiveness can have on your life.
I'm sure that there were many people that you talked to who were survivors of the genocide, similar to the guard in the jail, who felt like they wanted to seek revenge and that what had happened to their families was unforgivable. Have you ever talked to somebody who was really angry or wanted to seek revenge and could not wrap their head around practicing forgiveness?
Oh, yeah, many people. When you go to Rwanda today, you still see people who still have open wound. I always felt, after the genocide, Rwanda will be new, maybe 100 years later. But I really think forgiveness is individual journey. Healing is individual.
Do you have any advice for somebody who comes to you and says, I can't forgive, I'm going through something in my life and it's unforgivable and I don't know how to forgive, it's impossible?
First, once I think you are already considering it, I really applaud you. Applaud anybody who is in that place. Just having that state of mind, wanting to be free from that, a day will come. Help will come. And it's okay. If you are a victim, yes, you have been hurt. However, if you can only acknowledge that unforgiveness is hurting you, not them, not anybody else, acknowledge it's hurting you. Be willing to forgive. Just be willing.
Sometimes the hardest thing about forgiveness is that it feels like you're giving in. That if you aren't angry enough about an injustice done to you, then you're surrendering what hurt you so deeply. Even today, Immaculee acknowledges that she sometimes feels that anger for everything she lost in the genocide.
People kept telling me, there's no way you can be happy after what happened. There's no way you can forgive. And believe me, to this day, I still cry. I think about, I wish my mom was here, my dad, my brothers. So tears would always be a part of my life. But they didn't stop me from enjoying other things in my life.
Immaculee tries to remind herself of some of her greatest role models. People like Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr., and Gandhi. People who have defined history by their ability to forgive.
There's so many ways that it makes you feel like you are being weaker. But forgiveness is strength. Forgiveness is owning your life back. Because people who hurt other people, they have been hurt too. And if they hurt you, they're going to hurt another person. Because what they're fighting with is that inside thing they have, that lack of love. They will take it where they go. The same way when you go, you have your unforgiveness. You take it where you go until you put it down.
Thanks so much for listening, and a huge thank you to Immaculee Ilibagiza for sharing her incredible story. Immaculee continues to tour the world as a motivational speaker, and in 2007 received the Mahatma Gandhi Reconciliation and Peace Award. You can find her books Left to Tell and Led by Faith wherever books are sold. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness and meditation content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. This episode is produced by Monique Laborde and Otis Gray. Sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogoway.